on the general topic of breaking statistical exotropy, and this talk is more or less organized as follows. I will spend a few 10-15 minutes discussing the evidence, and then I will discuss a framework to compute CMB perturbations in these models, and then I'm going to discuss some applications on some models which have been proposed in the literature. And on the first part, I'm going to take a subset of papers, and I'm just going to mention a few effects that to me look interesting, but it's not going to be an exhausting explanation. So what is statistical exotropy? Well, it's this statement here, right, that the correlation is diagonal in Adam space and that the coefficients depend on them. This is what you get for Freeman, Roberts, and Walker universe. There have been claims of violation of statistical exotropy at the CME, and there are a number of 2 and 3 sigmas effect. The issue is that once it is such a mind level, the significance really depends on the statistics that you use, and particularly also it depends on what you use to test your data. And this is why you get conflicting claims which make us all uncomfortable, and I'm going to try to review the positive claims, but also some. I'm going to show you how things are susceptible to statistics. Some of these claims, not all, some of these claims are on physics at very large scales, where I will show that there is also the issue of how you deal with the galaxy. This makes some difference in the result. And of course, the largest scales are the most difficult ones, but are also the most interesting for cosmological purposes, because, of course, as you know, larger scales are those who left the horizon earliest, and so they are most sensitive to the earliest stages of inflation that we can grow. So they are the most difficult ones, but in a sense, they are also, for a cosmological point of view, interesting. Let me start from the first claim, because this also shows how things change when the data change. This is the paper by Tegmark et al., and they were producing a clean, what they call a clean map of the CME. So WMAP gives different channels, and in the first year they combined these channels to remove the foreground, but they were claiming that what they did was not careful enough, and they say this should be used only for illustrative purposes. They never used their linear combined map. But Tegmark, the collaborator, instead did what they claimed was a more precise way of subtracting foregrounds. Particularly, you combine the frequency in a way which depends on the galactic latitude and which accounts for different type of noise at different scales. And thus, they produce a map that they claim to be used for statistical analysis. And this is the statistic that they are considering. You know, the ALM, they are planar when m is equal to 1, right? M is equal to 0 is axial, when m is equal to n is planar. And they were checking, so you change the axis, and according to different orientation of the axis, you look when this quantity is maximized. This is the axis under which the multiple is most important. And here is the result for the quadruple, and here is the result for the octuple. And there are three odd things in this picture. The quadruple is well known from COBE, remember the laser is well known, is rather small on itself. And then there are two additional statements that the octuple is planar, much more than what you would expect in general, and you can visually see. And there is also an alignment. You define the axis in this way. There is an axis for the quadruple, an axis for the octuple. They are closer to each other than 10 degrees, and this is also an acceptable. The issue is that the problem is the plane of the alignment is 30 degrees apart from the galactic plane. And as you can see from the figures, there is a lack of power outside the galaxy. And some authors, Coppi et al., make a big deal about this. They say that this is really very strange. That's what you have. And the confusion on, if you remember, WMAP paper was also, the first paper was making a big deal about the log quadruple. There are many issues there, but one of the issues was that they were using a map with the galaxy cap. This was reducing the power, just because the power happens to be on the plane. Then there's a famous paper, mostly for this guy. The clip data is going to be important in the factory. Not yet, but it's going to be coming. This is a famous paper for the title, for sure. Also, it's a nice paper. They showed, they computed a different statistic. What you do here, you don't really care only for planarity. You look what is the axis in which one of the ALM is maximum. So this will be a configuration in which there is only one multiple, one component of the M's, which is the dominant one. And if you do the statistics, just again on the Tegmark et al. Map, they show that you get a common axis, very common, very close axis for the first fifth five multiples, and that's what is called the axis of people alignment. And many fewer people discuss the second paper, because the second paper actually shows that things are much more difficult. And here you see a lot of complicated tables, so let me explain a lot in here. This is the map of Tegmark, the one I'm discussing. This is another combination of the WMAP first year. It was done by Erickson et al. This is the map of WMAP, third year map. And this is the Tegmark map for 3 years. And WMAP 1 was already cosmic variance limited at this large scale. So it's not really an issue of 1 year versus 3 years data. It's more an issue how you clean the data. In the third year, it seems that people worked more, and so they understood better how to remove the photons and how to deal with the galaxy better. But then you repeat the same statistics that was done for the first year paper, and you can see here, this is for the different maps, which is the axis preferred for the quadrupole, octuple, blah, blah, blah. And you see that it changes. And it changes according to what map you change. And in particular, then you don't see any more alignment in the other map. So you see, the last column is the average deviation from the axis, which it happens that for the Tegmark et al. Map was really incredibly small, much smaller than 1 per million. But for the other maps, it happens that there is even more. So the claim is that the statistics was, in a sense, working very well for that map, but that is not stable against other way of treating the data. Notice also, right, the planarity, 2 and 3, this is the maximum M, which is only true here, and the other things is not, there's not really such a problem. However, what Lande Maguejo did, they also discussed a different statistics, which has a better significance. And again, here I'm entering in the issues that different tests can give different results. What they did, they do something which is probably more sensible. These are all frequentist claims. You just repeat realization, and then you check versus number of realization, but the better maybe way to study is to do model comparison. So you compare different models and you pay a penalty because more complicated models have more parameters. So the model that they are testing has 3 additional parameters. They just say that the value of the CS is the standard one if M is equal to L, but it's going to be reduced if M is different from L. So they are going to check how much planar the WMAP data are. And N is a generic axis that they can vary, but notice that they take the same value of N and the same epsilon for all the heads. So this model, N is 2 angles, so this model has 3 more parameters. And you can see that you get the same results, result in agreement with each other for all these different maps. What is interesting is that this is the Bayesian evidence, I'm not an expert, but this is taking into account that you have more parameters. This is a number that, if it is between 1 and 2.5 is mild significance. If it is more than 2.5, is a strong significance. Perhaps more than the number, is interesting to look at the plot. These are 10,000 realization of isotropic things. And this is how much the likelihood improve if you just fit the isotropic realization with this model here. And you see that there's always an improvement. But for WMAP, the improvement is quite significant. Only 2% of the times you improve more than for the WMAP paper. So here, in a sense, you take into account for the fact that you're always going to improve, but in this case, it seems you're going to improve slightly more. So you see two seemingly contradicting claims in the same slide. If you check for these statistics, you're not going to see anything. If you check for this model comparison, you're going to get 2%. This is now we come to the critic. This is different issues, north-south symmetry. Again, here is WMAP first year data, different bands, and a galactic cap, which removes 25% of the data. It's a little complicated, so let me explain. There are circles, they make a lot of circles in the CMB, and then they draw axes, which go from one circle to the opposite circle. And then imagine what is the, first of all, let me explain what is the color of the big disk. Imagine there is an axis which has the north pole pointing at the center of this disk. And then you compute the power in the north hemisphere divided by the power in the left hemisphere. And dark colors means that there is a high ratio, and not dark color means that there is a low ratio. In addition, so you can see that this region here has clearly more power than this region. In addition, you see the smaller dots are different things. And the green color means that the power in this disk is 80% bigger than on the average. So they do again many isotropic realization, and then they look whether the power in a disk is significantly higher or significantly lower. And you can see that the regions in the sky which have a significantly higher power are almost all here. The regions in the sky which have a significantly lower power are almost all here. If you just do the calculation, again this is a frequentist statement, you find that the anisotropy in the WMAP sky can be mimicked only by 3 per mil of isotropic realizations. There is a problem, everyone says it, and it's a real problem, that this is the ecliptic axis. So it seems, and the ecliptic axis is just the motion of the Earth around the Sun, and you know that the map goes with the Earth. So that's certainly a concern for everyone. Same effect, but now again a model comparison. So we compare, they compare the standard model of cosmology versus this model. This model is a dipole modulation, was introduced by Gordon and collaborators, just to try to understand whether they can get the north-south asymmetry. There is a constant here, and there is a dipole that you're putting. And here you assume that there is a random Gaussian signal. So if A is equal to 0 is standard case, A different from 0 is their case. And again, here is, you see a recent paper, so WMAP5, with this resolution, the different masks. But again, what is interesting is that more or less all the data are with each other. So the different bands give a comparable result for the privileged direction of the dipole, and they give comparable results for the amplitude. It's something between 7 and 11%. Here, they don't compute the Bayesian significance, they say, because just a computational time, not because they think it's hard, or it would give different results. If you just look at the normal significance, you see they are pretty much similar. What is interesting to notice is that this is the same group of authors which did the calculation using half resolutions. So they couldn't go so far in any space. And apparently, jumping from 9 degree resolution to 4.5 degrees resolution increase a lot the significance. So this is a, if this calculation is correct, this would be interpreted as a string. And here is to show how stable these claims are with respect to different data set. This was the point of the previous slide, a little far from the other ones. These are the points that you would get for different bands. So they are more or less independent of each other. This again is the axis of maximum. Finally, I'm going to discuss another model, which is the model of Ackermann et al., Ackermann, Carroll, and Weiss model. And this is the parametrization that they do. So this is not anymore a dipole, it is more of a quadrupole dipole. Now I have to make a statement, because I'm the person who showed that this model is unstable, and I always get pissed off when people call this the Ackermann et al. Model. Because in this literature, you hear the word model for just a parameterization of the power spectrum. I don't know your opinion, but in my language, a model is something that I find.
I feel strongly
that
a model is heading
blind. Okay, then I shouldn't get upset. But there are two things in this paper. One is a specific model with a Lagrangian, which I'm going to show doesn't work. But the second is a disparametrization of the power spectrum, which is a reasonable parametrization. So there is a geometry. So here is the power spectrum. In principle, you know, in the standard case, it doesn't depend on the direction, only on the amplitude. But here they do a Taylor expansion. And what is this geometry? Right here, we expect this result for a geometry which has a planar symmetry. An axial symmetry, right? Because there is going to be a privileged axis. So, for example, there's going to be, if D is along with the axis, x, y symmetry. But also, there's going to be a planar symmetry thing minus 3. This is the simplest geometry you can imagine beyond three. said, okay. So to me, even if their model is questionable, this parameterization is it makes sense to study just these as a candidate. And that's precisely what these two people have done. Again, this is a V-band, two different bands of WMAP5, and here is the result for this parameter G-star. Now, this G-star, in principle, can depend on K. As I write it here, it's pretty clear, but actually I'm making a mistake. Here, this K and this V should be K yet, so these are just the directions. And here you see, however, that the two bands agree with each other, but you see that this is not just a large scale. You need to account this modulation. You have to study this effect on small scales as well to get some signal. Because here is only if you take L up to 100. Here is when you take L from 200, from 100 to 400. Here is when you take all Ls into account. And it's simply cosmic patterns. So it's just you have more data. When you go up to 400, it allows you to get a better discrimination. And there is this paper which discusses and so a case for this paper is wait for the plant because plant is a better way to understand this effect. This is mostly related to what I'm going to talk in a moment. There are some systematics, right, which I'm not discussing here. And there are three types of systematics that were discussed in this paper. One is the foreground subtraction. But then they say this seems pretty good because different bands are going to give the same result. So this seems to be quite fine. The other is just a scanning. So WMAP scans, but they scan data in different directions. But when you scan, you may introduce an anisotropy. And WMAP, this is what in German is called correlated noise. WMAP gave estimation for the correlated noise, and they checked. There is a third effect, which is the axisymmetric WMAP pipes. So it's not perfectly circular. And this is what they are working on. They just produced a paper recently. They claim that they are going to visualize everything that they can expect. So this is a systematic that is not yet found before, and they say we don't really know whether it's going to make an effect. However, if there is no for this systematic, these are posteriori probabilities. Is a 3.8 signal for this effect, assuming that there is no system. Okay, now this is it. So you see there's going to be other anomalies which I didn't discuss, like the cold spot or the flow that we were discussing yesterday. And there's going to be any more papers, and I apologize. I do not speak them. So now let me jump from the data to different type of models. And this is something that we said yesterday, which I totally agree. It's possible that we will accept a model if we can explain more than one. And there are many effects. All of them are going to be of the 2, 3 sigma level, and they are never going to improve because this is what the data are. And but there are more than one of them. And if we find a way to explain more of them, then certainly it's going to be interesting. Perhaps we should learn to do calculation the outcome of a single effect. And perhaps we should learn to do detailed calculation. And that's essentially what my goal was. I tried to do the literature where I could learn how to do this, but I found it another. And so we decided to learn it for ourselves. And I don't believe that this is the real answer to the problem, but this is the one I studied because it's the simplest extension of the. This is a Bianchi 1 universe. It's isotropic, but it's non-isotropic, but homogeneous. And notice that there are two features. The first is a residual 2D isotropy, right, the axis. And the second is that there is this symmetry x squared minus x. So the paper you have certainly is more interesting in a sense it could explain a type of modulation, which would be the condition. Certainly, I can use this. But as I say, this is the simplest thing I can do beyond the water, so it's worth learning about the
calculation.
No, I cannot, because you see, I have a symmetry. Right. Here now, my privilege axis, I change rotation is x, and I have a symmetry x minus x, so I can maybe explain a quadruple population, but I cannot explain any other population. But this is a good playground. I don't really expect this is the world. is a good playground to learn how to do this kind of technology. Because at the end, these are small effects, so we better learn how to do this. Now, I'm sorry I'm gonna force you to listen or not, but to force you to go through a few of details, and I want just to tell you that we have the tools to do this calculation and just outline these calculations. In the standard case, there are some seminal papers which are really beautiful. They discuss how to compute perturbation in Freeman horizon walker. And when we speak, we say that there are two perturbations in Freeman horizon walker, the scalar model and the tensor model. But honestly, we have three perturbations because we know there are two polarizations of the tensor model. What happens is that they behave identically, so we never think of them as distinct, but there are three perturbations in the world. This was very nicely then quantized by Hooker, and we'll discuss how we do semi-classical things of these, and how we can measure this. Sure.
So because these effects are small, so why can't we create them perturbations on the production background?
Well, how would you do it? I mean, at the end, I want to compute the Sundian result of the correlation, so I think that that's the one you should learn. Certainly, I could treat this particular, but I don't think it's going to be simpler than that.
Because you should talk some more about
well,
the effect of an anisotropy on perturbations.
It is going to be a 10% effect, I can probably learn how to do. Honestly, I don't think it's going to be much simpler than this. It's a fair point that that's actually the way that Ackermann and Tal kind of expand. But I don't see why I shouldn't do this. Moreover, what I want to discuss now is a case where, for example, one of the examples where the universe has occupied, but there are situations where initially the geometry is rather far away. So I can have a situation where I should do the calculation. But it's possible. I can probably understand. This might be more curiosity also, right? How do we... These are the first questions that came to my mind when I was discussing this problem. How many physical nodes there are when the geometry is not Freeman horizon walker? And how do they behave? And what is the difference? Right? These are the first questions I was asking myself. And the first question is obvious now once you think about it, but this was the one I was keeping on squeezing. And the answer is still three. Perhaps it's obvious once you read these, it was not immediately obvious to me. And the number of nodes depends only on the sources. And you know, in the standard case, it's three because it's 11 minus 4 minus 4. And it's going to be always the case. So you have, here is for an infrared. You have 11 nodes, 4 of them are removed by general coordinate transformation, and 4 of them are non-dynamical. Non-dynamical, right, physically means that they don't propagate, so they don't give you additional degrees of freedom. And mathematically means that there are some constraint equations that you can solve. And you use these to integrate this concept. How they behave, what is the real difference between these and Freeman horizon walker, is that they are going to be coupled already. Right. At the linearized level, the three modes, the scalar mode, and the two-dimensional polarization are decoupled from each other, but in a generic geometry, they're going to be coupled to each other. There are two regimes in which they're going to be decoupled. One is the UV regime, because in the UV regime, the momentum is what controls the frequency, and then when the background becomes isotropic. What are the signatures? The signatures are precisely of the type that we look for. So you're going to get non-diagonal correlations for the ILM. But also what you're going to get, you're going to get a non-standard amplitude for the particles. Because, for example, they're going to be coupled to each other, coupled to the other modes, and they don't necessarily behave in the same way. Now, we don't know if you're ever going to see the gravity waves. But if you're going to see the gravity waves, maybe studying their properties could tell us a specific signal. These I'm going to be a little technical for a couple of slides. I'll try to be quick. There is a nice way that we can employ the symmetry of the model to do this calculation. And here I'm going to employ the residual two-dimensional symmetry that I have. So this is going to be the 0, 0, 0, 1, and 0i, where I just multiply the 2 or 3. because there is an isotropic space. And the modes behave either as scalar into dimension or as vector into dimensions. And these modes have 1 degree of freedom each, because I can be either 2 or 3, but these modes are going to be transverse. So there is 1 degree of freedom in the scalar, but there is also going to be 1 degree of freedom in the vector. In the standard calculation in 3D, there is tensor modes, but here there are no tensor modes. If you take in 2 dimension and compute the degrees of freedom, you find that there is no degrees of freedom. So there's going to be 7 two-dimensional scalar and 3 two-dimensional vectors. And what is good of these is that they are decoupled in the US. So you can just study the 2 separate. And the second thing I want to point out that is more convenient to choose a gauge that people never choose. If you go, I don't know how many of you went to Mukano's paper of calculation. It looks very magical that they end up with all this. They have a huge mess. And sometimes they just see that some pieces just go away. And it's really mysterious. They don't really explain how these pieces go away. But actually, the best way to see it, you go in a gauge where you don't eliminate any of the 0 new modes, because you know that these are precisely the new modes. These are the modes which enter in the action without telling the relativism. And the equation of motion in the ADM formula is not known to be the constraint and momentum. So rather than choosing a gauge where you kill these modes, it's much better to choose a gauge for this. Because then you're going to immediately know how to do the calculation. Of course, the number of non-dynamical modes doesn't depend on the gauge. But if you have a more generic gauge, it's much harder to do the calculation. Moreover, you can use a gauge invariant formulation, but it's technical and I don't want to. This gauge, in any case, specifies the gauge freedom component. So it is as good as choosing gauge invariant. And let me just mention another technical point that I've done. This is the action for your system. So Y is perturbations which are dynamical, N are perturbations which are non-dynamical. The coefficients depend on the background. So what it means, the coefficients can be horrible functions. Typically, these are really horrible, but schematically, they are not so bad. And the non-dynamical fields don't have derivatives, so you can just integrate them. What I mean is just I compute their equation of motion, and then I throw it. And this is the final action for the dynamical modes. This is the physical action for your system. So here, there are all the physical perturbations that you have, and this is the free action. So what you need to do, you need to diagonalize and quantize the free action. The most of the information is contained in this matrix, which is the kinetic matrix of the system. And this kinetic matrix, the eigenvalues are going to tell you if you have a good fit or if you have a positive. So in the standard case, there is a 3-vector matrix which has a positive eigenvalue, so you can just connect them as well. However, it may happen, I will show you, that in some of these models, this matrix contains negative eigenvalues, which means that the theory is a ghost, which means that this model doesn't make sense. Finally, another comment, these matrices depend on time. So there may be situations where, as time proceeds, at some point, this matrix becomes an invertible. If this matrix becomes non-invertible, well, you can try to invert an invertible matrix, things are going to go up, which means that the model is unstable. Physically, right, if you have a perturbation and the kinetic term goes to zero, it means that you are in strong perturbation. What it means is that everything goes up. And let me discuss one example to warm up, and then I will discuss a more reasonable example that's about it. So, the simplest example I'm considering is the obvious one which comes to my mind. There is a cosmological constant or an inflating field, and then there is a universe which is initially isotropic. The universe is isotropizing between the cosmological constants. So let me just learn how to do the calculation in this case. Now, I need to know how the universe behaves at very early times, and at early times the universe is in the cosmic regime, because it depends on your assumption, but my assumption is that the scalar field is slower. So if I go in the past, there's going to be a situation where the metric is huge and the scalar field is huge. It's a self-planned solution. And it's very well known that these are the solutions for the Kastner space, and there are some coefficients which need to satisfy these conditions. Now here I don't have much freedom because I have a 2D isotropy, so I need to satisfy these 2 constraints, and it turns out that I have only 2 solutions. And these are the 2 solutions for factors. You can see that on the right, there is the asymptotic sitter stage where they expand in the same expansion rate. And then there's going to be an initial stage, which is in the cast number chain. This is one constant, one expanding linearly. Here there is one scale factor, which is actually contracting, and one that is expanding. Now,
this is the solution to the phase motion of the top-notch.
Yes, or if you put a slowly rolling field, you get this.
So is it generic for accelerating, or just generic for any type?
It's generic, is the most generic self-driving solution, then you put a generic field. Where zero means something you can generate. You don't have to. Of course, I'm assuming that there is this isotopy, right? Otherwise, you
so
get...
What's Jimmy Leiston's
equation? As the equation is put, there is a Patrick solution. And what you learn if you study Kasner is that if there was no cosmological constant at all, if this was pure Kasner, this would be a regular state. This actually is an impossible universe in an accelerated frame. It's the Kasner 1.0.0. All these other Kasner are similar. Now, the fact that I have a cosmological constant tells me that this is not exactly impossible. But this is a regular region. There is not, the geometry is a regular. You can compute all the Kummator invariants and nothing goes up. Instead, here, if you compute the Riemann sphere, it's not for this reason, I'm going to disregard this because this is not a typical. I have some discussion about this solution. If you want, I can tell you later on. But this is more typical of a Kasner state. So let me just discuss the perturbations of the universe. So notice that there is a very quick isotropization. Then the universe is the sitter. Before that, there is a phase. But this phase, there is not much room. There is a singularity, which is one Hubble time far away from the sitter space. Okay? Because this is just the Hubble parameter at the time of the sitter.
So just the ball, cosmic nuclear theory of the ball.
I'm going to go there in a few seconds. But this is not because I believe it, right? This I just really want to learn what the results are, and then I'm going to try to see whether I can improve or do better models. Here is there's a lot of algebra that I'm adding here because I already bothered you with too much details, but this is schematically the result. So when the universe becomes isotropic, H cross and H plus become the depolarization of the algebra waves. But as long as the universe is an isotropic, H plus is not to the scalar. This is the one which becomes the scalar perturbation. And the coupling, we are canonically normalized them, so the coupling is going to be in the frequency. And why did I bother to discuss the initial Kasner stage? Because typically, when we do inflation, we go early times, and that's where we start our adiabatic vacuum. That's the typical calculation that we do. You don't need to start in the adiabatic vacuum. You can, people debate about this, but that's one of the assumptions. And here, I want to understand how the perturbations behave in the Kasner regime, just to understand how should I put my initial conditions. And if I do this calculation, I learn that I have no idea what I should do. And the reason is because this is what the momenta does. You see, there was one direction which was contracting. So if I go early in time, the momentum in this direction is going to be negligible. The other momentum is going to grow, but the other parameter grows more. So this is typically expression for the frequency matrix. The trouble is that during inflation, in the deep UV, early times, you go in the deep UV, where this is nearly constant. In this case, formally, it's always momentum squared plus a very complicated function of h squared. But the trouble is that this quantity here is going to go into the quantity. If you look close to the singularity, this is the result that you find. And actually, what you find is that, first of all, none of them evolves adiabatically, so you have no idea how to set your adiabatic vacuum. Second, one of these modes is a tachyon, has a negative square frequency. What are the consequences of this? Is that the perturbation is going to blow up as phase. And what I'm going to show here, not because I believe it, but just to understand what the perturbations are doing, I'm starting very close to the singularity with a power that I normalize to 1, because I really don't know how to set initial. And so I'm just computing the classical mode, the classical growth of these perturbations. What happens here, I'm showing this quantity here, these are three different wavelengths. One is a wavelength which is very large. One green is intermediate, one is very small. But then you know that in a Kasner is not accelerating, the modes go from large wavelength to small wavelength regime. And so this is the green, what is doing. The green is going from large wavelength regime to small wavelength regime. The blue one is always in small wavelength regime, and the red is always in the large wavelength regime. And you see that here the power grows of 10 orders of magnitude, here the power decreases. So the question is that you're going to find a very strong scale balance in the final result. And also, this growth only regards this polarization. I didn't show that one here, but the other two polarization remains. What I'm really showing you here is the analogous of Casimir instability for contracting spaces. So if there was no inflation, here is, you see, is when the cosmological constant takes over. You know, when the cosmological constant takes over, the fluctuations freeze. But before the cosmological constant takes over, what you see here is the instability of Casimir space, which is something which is very well known in this time. A statement which doesn't make much sense, but still let me make it. In these generic models, you're going to get a classical growth of gravity waves. Now, in the standard inflationary picture, the gravity model is going to just be proportional to the upper parameter of inflation. This is a model which is not very realistic, but which gives a huge tensor symmetry. The trouble is that this is a very tuned model. And this is a problem that concerns many of these models. And the reason is what I was plotting you before, right? What you're going to get, let me just go to the previous slide, you're going to get a singularity which is very close to the decentral stage. So the perturbation which leaves the horizon from here on, they are going to be perfectly standard. And what is going to finally happening is only the perturbation that leave the horizon or the enter the horizon of this stage. But if you have a longer phase of inflation, whatever happened to here is going to be blown up on scale, is much bigger than what you can see. So if inflation is long, it makes the universe nice. And that's the trouble, that I need really to tune the duration of inflation. If inflation is much greater than 60 fold, all this funny behavior will affect the sky on scales much greater than what
you can see. So here you have instabilities.
Yes.
The Lagrangian is just a scalar.
Yes, yes. And it's just an instability of the
vector. But the problem is how sensitive it is to the initial
vector. It is the closer I am to the initial singularity, the more this thing is going to grow.
The singularity is a Casimir
maximum. You see, when you study this with Schechter, you can really be very deep. You can just say that you have a Casimir stage, pure Casimir, and then you have a rotational stage when the decomposition takes over. And that's a very unusual approximation. So what we're really discussing here is the instability of Casimir space. The cosmological constant doesn't really play any role here. It's just Casimir space which is instable. And this is something very well known. These are Casimir space effects. Well, that's actually what was our issue. We showed that when we did the following, we took our formulas, we showed that when the universe contracts, we are bringing the result of these papers. When you reverse from contraction to expansion, we show that it's the same. Yes?
I always thought that
our
universe is basically equivalent to the instability against an isolated.
Here I'm not really showing what I am drawing. So if I wait long enough, I will arrive at a point where the geometry is going to be different from one side. But here I'm just looking at the linearizing region. And you can imagine that there will be a range in which the ground will not change. In a sense, I understand what you're saying. I'm just telling you, in our language, the isotropization manifests itself as a. If you wait long enough, the geometry will be completely different. But if you don't wait long enough, you will end up in the same geometry plus the rotation. This is non-homogeneous, moreover, right? But this is just a generic result. So what you have in mind is just the background which becomes homogeneous. This is certainly true for the
perhaps
doesn't
explain. So I start with this thing. Wait long enough, and
the growth that you see here is a physical growth. You compute the, well, you need to compute invariant quantities. You compute the value invariant, and we saw that this growth is much more than that. So, we think it's a physical. If you do, if you do a particular pure Casimir,
if you do a pure Casimir, you're going to just get this result with alpha and beta just constant, and so one is going to just be contracting, and the other is just going to be
expanding. So, like the presence. Okay, so let's try to make sure. There is just pure Casimir, is not going to isotopize. In order to isotopize Casimir, there are two ways. You put matter. And this was the traditional study. Just because matter prefers to have an isotropic solution. Second, you can do the recombinant.
Marco, is what you're saying is it, does it just mean that if you didn't have the cosmological constant in the future?
Yes.
Then, of course, these Casimirs, I mean, they will basically do this, these scale factors will chop across. The one that started small would go big, and the other one that started big went small, and then, in a certain sense, if that's the case, it's not too surprising that you have bad instability on both sides.
Let me say one thing. You are referring to the Casimir oscillations, which were discussed by this
people. Well, no, I mean, just following this instability, I mean, but one would think that if you actually put in cosmological constant, have cosmological constant that's actually beginning to isotropize the function rates.
Yes.
Then presumably the instability would be shut off by that? In the
future? That's what you said.
Okay. So what is a Casimir question?
It's just a solution of vacuum, and there are elastic classes of solutions.
No.
Only one special case.
You have one circle, if you like. Imagine torus. Right? There are one circle shrinking, and that the energy of that circle shrinking feeds into the energy of the other circle's expansion.
So
you go from a singularity into a singularity, except the dimensions sort of turn around. Those that start big become small, the orthogonal dimensions that start small become big. And
so
the future. Perhaps it might even be thought of, if you compactify it.
Yes.
The answer is no. I mean, the theta space compactified those circle stuff would be some very special example that doesn't need to go.
No matter whether you put the cosmological constant or not, at any time it's not going to matter. And just the classical solution comes up.
So it's unstable going both forward.
Yes,
that's the justification.
The justification is that BKL discusses the generic approach towards singularity, and they were showing that there is instability, but if you kill one mode, you have a subclass of solution which is really nice, and there is oscillation of Casimir inverse. But what this requires is that you kill one of the modes. So I agree with you. I don't think that, in my opinion, Casimir is interesting. Although there is the common knowledge of a generic approach to singularity should be described by Casimir, and I think that is your.
That doesn't say.
So, is the main point of this, as far as actual, original motivation is concerned, is the main point that you really don't want to parameterize the initial state of the pre-inflationary universe by a Casimir solution because it's not really calculable?
The main point of this is that when I started this project, I thought that the other part was the perturbations. As I was doing it, I understood how to do the perturbation, and then I moved to the next step. How do I find sensible backgrounds? How do I find backgrounds for which I can predict things? And this is incredible, right? It's a small deviation from Hilbert-Robertson Walker, but I get a configuration where there is an immediate singularity there, so it is really not a small deviation.
No.
So the issue is that not only we need to learn how to do the regulation, but we also need to learn how to go outside of Hilbert-Robertson geometry. That motivates the next models that we will discuss. which are all, let me just discuss. Now this is what Nemanja was saying, and then was Nemanja to look at that paper, which is Wall's paper on isotropization of the antimatter. It's a very nice paper. So the discussion in this paper is that under some rather generic assumption, if you put a cosmological constant on an isotropic space, the space anisotropic space, the space is anisotropic. And there are some way out to this statement. You need to do something to prevent the universe from isotropizing. You can add higher curvature terms, but then the model is really very difficult and I don't want to study that. You can add the Kadra-Mond axiom, but this is already also too difficult for me. And I can do the next step, which is from the calculational point of view, it's the simplest of all, which is just to take a vector. So we take a vector field and we give a vev, and this should have been x. We give a vev to the vector field along a privileged direction. And different models differ on the way you achieve this, in the way you give a vev. The first paper was by Ford 20 years ago. He just put a potential for the vector field. Then there has been a paper by Ackerman and Dahl where they had a fixed norm. We're going to discuss what they mean. And then a paper where there is a couple to the convention. My claim is that none of these papers works. They are all unstable, as I'm going to discuss. I'm not going to discuss Ford's paper, but I can tell you why. These two are more standard right now, so I'm going to just concentrate on this. No minimal coupling to the curvature. This is just this. Just to remind my notation, this is the metric I'm going to use, and I define an average Hubble expansion and the difference between the Hubble expansions. And I'm going to parameterize the value of the scalar field with the value b. I'm going to take the scale factor out. The reason is because when you compute quadratic invariants, you don't have the scale factor. So, for example, when you are interested in the energy, it's directly proportional to b. So this quantity b is the physical quantity, which is telling you energy, and it's also telling me how much the universe is an isotope. And here is the evolution of B, is given by this complicated equation. But let me for a moment assume that I have isotropic universe. Let me assume that there is out of this Ribbons model. Then what you have that this little h is negligible. You get that there is the only real big contribution to the mass. And then you see if psi is equal to zero in the standard case, right, you can imagine psi is equal. If psi is equal to zero, this goes down as 1 over scale factor. It's a usual statement that magnetic fields drop as rock. But of course, you can consider a different situation where psi is equal to 1/6. If psi is equal to 1/6, then you can imagine that your vector field is going to move slowly. This has been used for a number of applications, primordial magnetic field, right? This is 500 plus citations. Vector inflation, you use this vector just as a slow log field because now this new term is going to be key, or you can use it as a curvature to generate populations. My claim is that even this model doesn't work, even this model is as a ghost, and I'm pretty surprised that I could not find any where to discuss this because these are very well known data. And let me just show you the issue because it's very simple. You don't really need all the calculation to show you to see this. Now, as I'm telling you, they need precisely this 1/6 coupling, right? So you need precisely a mass term that needs to be with a given specific coefficient. And my claim is that this leads to a ghost, not to a coupling. And it's very important. We have a wrong mass term, but this leads to a ghost, which is a term which has negative value, not just a term. The easiest way, here, almost everyone, I think you're familiar, but when I give this talk, I would be able to come back to convince people. But the easiest way is to go into stupid. You introduce a U1 symmetry, you see this is breaking the U1 symmetry, but you can introduce it again. And you can study the same theory in a different gauge where it's easier to study. And in this gauge where B mu is decoupled from phi, you end up with a scalar field. The scalar field parameterizes the longitude of the excitation in mu. You see that no matter what you do here, the sign of this kinetic term is always related to this plus sign here. I'm using the metric minus plus plus plus, so plus sign means that they are notice that this doesn't require a result. Here I'm just showing you that if you start with this term, no matter what the background is, you're going to get this. And something which I don't need to tell you, but sometimes I need to remind people, is that, you know, why a mass term tells me that I have a gross term? Well, we know very well that from massive gravity, if you don't choose this special M year the same year, you get a gross term rather than a mass term. And the reason is because this mass term is the one which generates the longitudinal gross. So in a sense, it's not surprising that this number here controls the nature of the longitudinal gross. And that, the alternative way to see it, much more direct, you just need to you just take your quadratic action, you compute the inverse of that, which is the propagator, and then you check the residue of the propagator to see whether what state you have. If m squared is greater than zero, you can go in the rest frame, because my m squared is positive, so k squared can be negative. In the rest frame, the poles are minus one, minus one, minus one. Remember, my signature is telling me that I have three normal. If I have m squared negative, I cannot go in the rest frame when I consider the physical state, but I go in a frame where there is no energy. And when you do this calculation, you see that one pole is 1, minus 1, minus 1. Again, I'm telling you the same thing that I was telling you before. There is one state when m squared is negative, in this notation, m squared negative, where there is a pulse. So the behavior of the modes depends on the sign. And notice that here I'm not doing the gravity expansion, but if you have an isotropic space, so better to say, if you don't have any vector field, like in the terminal middle model, then you know that the perturbation of the vector field don't mix with perturbation of gravity. So this is the free theory for the vector field, and so for sure you get a gross. Now, the calculation is more complicated than you have gravity, and there you need to sweat. But the final result is the same, so let me just give it. This is the model of vector inflation by Mukhanov et al. There are different versions of the same model. You see, before I was discussing the case in which this n is equal to zero, if you add m, m is just a slow roll mass. And now what you have their idea is that there's going to be many number of vector fields, like 10 to the 32, but still a big number of them. And then the idea is that if you have many vector fields, on average you will have an isotropic background. But then there's going to be a dispersion, which is going to be proportional to 1 over square root of n. So in this idea, you get naturally a smaller isotrope. And the number of perturbations is incredibly bigger. There is the one of the metric, but then each vector field carries four additional perturbations. And the simplest situation, which is the one I'm going to discuss, is the one where there are three vectors only, mutually perpendicular, so you really don't have isotropic. This is just the simplest case you can do. The trouble is that in this case there are 18 perturbations, and they are all coupled to each other. So you cannot disregard them in this model in the calculation. They did a second paper where they discussed the gravity waves, assuming that they are decoupled from the rest of the theory, but this is one. You can really check that even the tensor model, see the background is isotropic, so you may think gravity waves will be decoupled, but the answer is not, because there is the vector. And we didn't compute the equation of motion. I mean, my student is very good, but he refused to compute the equation of motion. But he didn't refuse to compute the determinant of the matrix. That's something that is still very long calculation, because it's an 11 by 11 matrix. They didn't do it in the paper. And here is the result for the determinant. It blows up, but I really don't care that it blows up. Here it just means that one more becomes an but there's no instability if the determinant blows up. But then you see the determinant also goes to zero. I expect that when the determinant, here is for just some choices of the momenta. If you change momenta, you still find the qualitative the same. There is a singularity in the solution that I expect here. I'm going to show you later a simplified situation. And here's something that I'm still understanding. This is what is already in the publication of this paper. Here the determinant is positive, but there are two negative determinants. I don't understand why there are two and not three. Because remember, there are three vector fields. I would expect three longitudinal doses, but the only thing I can assure is that this result is correct. We did it many times, and I stand on this result, and I'm trying to understand what this result means. I really don't understand why here there are only two negative vector fields. One combination mixes with gravity and becomes a negative. I would like to see it explicitly.
So what's on the x-axis?
On the x-axis, yes, very good question. is the value of H over P. So you remember here the background is isotropic. So here I will have a stage of as a standard case. I start with the iPhone and then I end up and I will show you in a moment why the determinant vanishes close to horizon crossing. But I don't know where, but I'll show you some simplified calculation when you see this. And you see what other people have done, they have studied this theory in the super in the sub-horizon limit or in the super-horizon limit. If you do these studies, you completely miss this theory. It's really something strange. You need to do the full calculation, and then you see that something strange happens at horizon cross, or close to horizon cross. I really have no idea what happens there, despite the calculation. Okay,
overall, is that
it looks very narrow. It is very narrow, but I'm going to show you an extra example in a moment, no matter what you do. Here, the solution are going to work. So, and also, what is important is that even if you don't see it here, I'm telling you that here there are two negative eigenvalues. So, in this model, there are two ghosts. So, no matter what happens here, this model is already key because it doesn't
have. Like you have a vector field which is simultaneously a ghost on the back field.
Perhaps. What you see.
So if you do go to some rest frame or empty and one, you have, if you just look at the residues of the poles on the top of it, then, I don't know.
You see, I did the brute force calculation, and now I know how to refine this calculation. I can use a slow roll. I'm sure I can understand this. I don't understand it yet. I don't know. It's very strange that I have to do it. It must be some diagonal combination which combines with the metric. Well, the horizon crossing is at zero, so this is parametrically close to horizon crossing. So here is inside the horizon because I'm showing H over P, so this means H smaller than P. Here means H bigger.
Yes, where is the horizon?
Okay, as I said, I could not force him to do 18 equations of motion, but I could force him to do this. And is in a sense, you mimic, instead of having n fields, you mimic the collective effect of the fields with a cosmological constant, and then you concentrate to only one vector. So here is a simplified model of vector inflation, where there is only one vector field, plus a cosmological constant. The cosmological constant is mimicking the collective effect of all the vectors, and the remaining vector is the one that I want to discuss. Now, in this case, there is going to be a small vector for the vector, and you see here H, remember, is the anisotropic rate, which is going to be proportional to the vector of the vector field. And since I have fine-tuned the coefficient, the vector field is moving slowly. So you see the anisotropy is decreasing slowly. And there's going to be many perturbations, but much simpler than before, because there's going to be only one vector field. And moreover, there is only one vector field which is available. So I can still decompose the perturbation in dynamical ones and in dynamical ones. And I can deal with a system of seven couple modes rather than three. This means still five or six pages of full of calculation, not just algebra, which I'm not showing you, but at least it's good. And here is the result. So here I have three physical modes, let me repeat. remember there were two, and okay, the vector sector is a big way.
You really care about fast instabilities, which occur at short distances, where meeting with gravity is not even important. So
you think at horizon crossing, I think we want an intuition, I can tell you.
No, but at least for short distances compared to horizon, because it's not clear instabilities at the horizon crossing scale, when there are any bad things.
But if your linearized calculation goes up, then certainly that
no, 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 but the universe itself expands with the same time scale. If you have instability with the time scale of the horizon scale.
Okay, two things. First of all, we are not discussing the time, we are discussing the rest. If I'm going to, let me maybe postpone this calculation when I discuss.
No, but even ghosts, because this is not Lorentz invariant theory, so ghosts just means that there are some negative energy states in your theory, but they are only this small energies. They're not the best. Actually, they're even milder than Dacron stabilizers.
Let's. I'm happy to discuss. Just give me 5 minutes. We'll be right there. That this is the solution of the linearized equations. There is no doubt that the solution will have to improve, no matter what happens. What you see here is the eigenvalues of the kinetic matrix. Two of them are well behaved, but one of them is the longitudinal vector. And the kinetic term goes to zero at this moment. When the kinetic term goes to zero, here I'm showing the one of the perturbations, all perturbations go up. So here I'm plotting the Newtonian potential of this theory. And you see that at this moment, this is just a solution of the linearized equation of motion. It just goes up. I'm going to discuss in a moment what I will do about the interactions, but this is a first step. I'm not cheating. This really goes to infinity in a finite time. So even if this occurs very quickly, it's not attacking, which when we need time to be, here is something that just goes up.
And you're saying that's just a consequence?
Yes. But it's not trivial, right? The international term goes to zero. We really need to do all the calculations. I wish I had a better
experience. But there are definitely models like that which are not some. There's both page goes to
the same. Perhaps, I'm just adding one line that was on the internet. We need to come back. Perhaps is a better way to do it. I'm not discussing this with you.
But how is it difficult? Because that's all we are doing, right?
As I said, I have taken the model, I compute the linearized calculation, I see that the linear calculation goes.
How about that? I know there are models like that which are
okay. Let me just go a couple of slides. I just want to see to show you the other model where the things are the same, and then I have my slide where I tell what this means for me, and then I have to discuss it. This is the model by Ackermann et al. Here is they have a Lagrange multiplier. This Lagrange multiplier forces a fixed VEV. This VEV is the one which is you put it in the x direction, is the one which creates a given expansion by space. And they say that they compute the cosmological perturbation, but in fact they don't.
What is the reason that you just let me use squared form and not
I could put all generic very frequent in the I don't have any one scene. And then according to what you put, you can get different results. The general statement is that you still find the box.
No, the general statement is there are choices such as there is no box.
This is not generic. The thing is there are choices.
No, but they're not fine-tuned. There are regions of parameters where there is a cost and regions of parameters.
Yes, this is the start.
What Osaka is saying is perfectly legitimate. I'm writing in one syntax, so there's no reason why this should be done.
We studied the paper, we are not discussing more than we are interested in technical syntax. Here, there is not much. They claim, in the literature, when you read the Ackermann et al. Model, the words are they compute the perturbation, that is not true. They compute the perturbation of the test field. And then they claim that the perturbation of the test field will be mimicking the perturbation. You can do this through mechanism of modulated perturbation, is one of the many ways. Instead of having a cosmological constant, you can have an inflow, and then the decay rate of the inflow can be controlled by the VEV of the second field. So, for example, a difference in the VEV of the second field just means a difference in the decay rate of the inflow, which eventually translates in an energy. This is one of the possible ways, but the point I want to say is that if you take a test field and you assume that the perturbation of the test field will convert to the perturbation of the metric, you better be sure that there are no original calculations. Because in their calculation, they just take an perturbed vector. And what you need to do instead, you need to compute the perturbation. So that's actually what we did. We took their model and we just did, as we performed in the starting, we did calculation of the perturbations. Also, in that case, we find that the kinetic matter vanishes at horizon crossing. And here is the solution again for the Newtonian potential in the gauge invariant. For the vector field, the linearized calculation will go out. Again, this happens in a region. You can see from here, it's parametrically close. Okay, now let me make my comments, and then I will be able to get your opinion. So what? linearized calculation grow up. Maybe the linear calculation doesn't grow up. And no, the linear calculation grows up. That's the question. But you see, when you give predictions, you give a beginning less. So maybe the, it may happen that the full linear evolution is stable, but certainly the linear evolution that we gave you are not correct because they are based on the linear calculation. So the fact that the linear calculation blows up doesn't mean that the model for sure is dead, but it means that all predictions that people gave in that model don't make sense. Assuming, and here is something that this is my opinion, but I really want to discuss this. Assuming that the singularity is cure, which is not cure, but assuming that the singularity is cure, is there any other problem with this theory? And either, I don't know, I'm telling you my opinion, even if. First of all, imagine that the ghosts survive until today. This is true for eternal and neither. Well, you know, today, the ghosts, if you have a ghost in your theory, the vacuum can decay, it could last in most excitations. And the rate of this decay is a UV divergent. Simply because you can produce SPD universe in one. And you need to put a cutoff. A theory with a ghost only makes sense as an effective theory. And the cutoff that you need to put today is 3 MeV. So if the ghost survives until today, this theory doesn't make sense because I can do the question with a cutoff of 3 MeV. The other thing that I believe is an issue here, yeah? I probably didn't prove it because I didn't study the theory, that's my impression, is that this theory is even worse than. Because you know, when you, here you have a U1 symmetry, and you broke U1 by hand, and you know very well that when you break a U1 symmetry, the longitudinal vector, this limit was only when it was gravitational. But the longitudinal vector has enhanced factor, which are P over N, momentum over mass. Here, the mass is going to be the upper rate, right? So today, this will be very small vector. So this vector, if it survives today, is going to be huge. But even in the early universe, I expect that this ghost is going to pick up to something which increases parametrically E divided by H. So I expect that all the quantum theory is out of control in the supervisor region. That's what I expect to be at this point. And now you could ask, can I have a good NV condition? Can I just make a better theory where perhaps I don't have this issue? And certainly you cannot do it in a unique way. Like the simple method. The condition I know for a vector mass term is the Higgs matrix. But you know, the sign of the mass will be related to the periodic term of the Higgs. And here is just for Sergei about those conversations. If perhaps there is a good way to discuss this, and perhaps this would be more. So here is my answer to the solo. Yes, but
so there are choices of Lagrangians that we don't have costs. So why?
Oh, because there are 50 more people that cited each of these papers, and we discussed this idea of these papers. I just want to point out that if you do the calculation correctly, these models don't work. And certainly, we are ready, right? We are the process of what are better models. And this is one of my ways to see. Like, for example, if you don't do any calculation, I don't think it's so difficult that there is going to be anything wrong with that. That's my input to the discussion. And it's certainly true that you perhaps there exists better models. I'm not saying that you will not put a possible model.
No, not
that you don't,
just models with vector spacing potential.
Yeah, and also you have to be careful that you still get to the ground evolution. In principle, this can be done, but this was not mentioned in this context.
Okay, this another possibility, I'm just going to flash this for a second, is what the student is doing right now on his own initiative. So you just take a different model where you don't break the symmetry, you can still get a result. It's a rather contrived calculation. You have a sector of the theory which gives you increasing anisotropy. You then introduce another scalar field and then create anisotropy.
I'm just saying this is one of the way around. I'm not saying this is the only way. But I think that if we care about these models, we should try to go along this way.
Okay.
Okay, conclusions, there is evidence, not the statistical result. The evidence is weak, as we know, but there is more than one feature, and often someone comes about and changes for more features than this. My small contribution to the field is to provide a way to do calculations of CMU and to point out some signatures which come out of simple model, but I think they are generic. Particularly, noon diagonal correlations, but also what is really peculiar is that the mean standard behavior of the gravity is whether we can see this or not. And I describe the way to do the calculation in a way which can understand it in a generic background. And I'm not saying there is no model that works, but the models so far that people have used.
Because if we don't have more questions right now, we can take a short break before more groups of PIs are ready to talk to you.